Welcome. The time is 6 o'clock morning, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop. It's a very, very good morning, a very great day, or rather the morning is very great because, I mean, receive good shower. We're still receiving that thing outside there. So it's a good day. So a very good morning to you all, Igala from listeners. And I'm Lois Ashimi, and this is Early Morning Scoop, a program where we bring you economic, business and social news update within the country and, of course, around the continent. And, of course, what we start off giving you international news on what is going on around the world, around the Africa continent. So now, just to start off, MTN, a South Africa resident, signed a memorandum of understanding with China Telecom and Hawaii for a strategy collaboration that is expected to advance the mobile operators offering in 5G cloud AI and also, of course, the business solutions. And of course, the MTN said the partnership will unlock new business opportunities. We might take a look, listen to this one.
Promotes collaboration with China Telecom and Huawei across a broad spectrum of activities will leverage state-of-the-art technologies across the MTN network. China Telecom Global, on the other hand, says the partnership unites China Telecom's global expertise in network solutions with MTN's expansive regional reach and Huawei's advanced technology, creating a powerful alliance to drive digital infrastructure development on the continent. MTN is among the largest mobile network operators in the world and the largest in Africa. It has telco operations in 17 markets on the African continent.
From a technology advancement perspective, I do think it facilitates quite a rapid growth and enablement, especially in things like Internet of Things, 5G devices, and of course, other avenues such as blockchain enablement. The reason for this is the more data you access, the more times you can actually process and develop insights. So because of the MOU, they have more access to more advanced technologies, but it's probably also going to be more affordable, which means more data collection points can occur, allowing for more analytics points. So from just a pure ICT and business strategy perspective, it is quite a good enablement point.
The deal is also expected to offer customers better daily experiences through intelligent and connected solutions. The collaboration is expected to have significant benefits beyond the telecommunications industry.
This collaboration will provide SA's businesses with access to advanced network solutions and potentially lead to advancement in sectors like mining and heavy industry that I report on quite heavily. And then it can contribute to job creation, economic growth, but also spurn a growth within like the SME market, because remember, when we're rolling out these kinds of infrastructure, there is a lot of auxiliary businesses, or at least auxiliary business that gets stimulated as well.
By leveraging the combined strengths of MTN, China Telecom and Huawei, the initiative will drive innovative solutions to empower the African continent.
Huawei.
And moving on within the country or the African continent is that just moving on also to the world economic and also all that when it comes to internationally, Donald Trump will attend this year's World Economic Forum meeting in Davos. Organizers have also confirmed as world leaders wait to hear more about the news or the newly US President Donald Trump policies as his pledge to end the war in Ukraine. We might take a listen to this one.
So Donald Trump will attend this year's World Economic Forum meeting in Davos, Switzerland, digitally. The summit organizers have confirmed as world leaders wait to hear more about the new U.S. president's policies and his pledge to end the war in Ukraine. Trump has returned to the White House with his inauguration coinciding with the start of the 55th annual meeting of the political and business leaders in the Swiss resort. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky will make a special address and take questions. Topics on the Davos agenda span mounting global geopolitical and economic uncertainty, trade tensions, climate goals, and how artificial intelligence can help make lives better. Organizers say Syria will be on the WEF's agenda as its foreign minister Assad Hassan al-Shabani will attend in person.
Overall, we are tracking with this program as we've prepared it over the past months, really big shifts in the global economy. We are, for example, seeing the changing geography of economic relations, of trade relations. We are also seeing, of course, different shifting supply chains. We're also seeing different deployment of economic tools. The emergence of, for example, industrial policy is just one. So on the economy, there are shifts that are under.
And just to follow up on that note, on that subject, U.S. President Donald Trump has officially returned to the Oval Office and has vowed to ensure the American become great again. And during his first speech as president, Trump also vowed to protect the justice system from abuse. We might take a listen to this one.
Congratulatory messages that we've heard as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We saw President Trump go back into a separate room in the U.S. Capitol after that ceremony and begin signing those executive orders that he promised in his inaugural speech. They mostly, so far from what we've been seeing, have to do with immigration. One of his central campaign promises in 2016 and in the 2024 election. The promises that really made him important to American voters, more than 70 million American voters voting for him this last time around, largely based on his concerns about undocumented immigrants coming into the United States. So we're still getting details on those orders, but so far what we know is that Trump has shut down the app that allows migrants to apply for entry into the United States. He's also declared an emergency at the southern border. He's also given himself the power to mobilize the military to address some of these issues. And we expect many more executive orders once he gets to that downtown arena in Washington, D.C., where he's promised to sign another round of them. So already a lot of work from the new Trump administration when it's really been only about 3 hours old.
Yeah, I think this is an opportunity for us as well as South Africans to learn about the processes in the U.S. So when the president signs an executive order, for instance, closing down the app, or let's focus on declaring an emergency at the southern border, what's the next step with that executive order?
That's a great question, because over the past few decades, the power of the presidency and the way presidents have wielded that executive order has only increased. When this country was first started, it wasn't thought of as something presidents could really use. But now Democrats and Republicans are increasingly using it because the U.S. Congress is unable to come to agreements on legislation to address some of these issues. So, of course, that does cause problems for both Democrat and Republican presidents. These executive orders are often challenged in court. They often have trouble being implemented because they need money for that implementation. So really, while it is a very important step, it can sometimes be challenged. And I suspect, given how divisive the issue of immigration is here in this country, we are going to be seeing that in the coming days.
Yeah, I mean, the issue of immigration, a really big one. And then, of course, he's talked about, I've touched on this a lot this evening, but it is a point that pundits here in South Africa have raised in our interviews tonight as well. The issue of gender. Mm. I mean, he was emphatic where that was concerned.
That's right. One of the things that we heard on the campaign trail about this issue of transgender people and the rights they are afforded in the United States. But we did hear very specifically from President Trump in his inaugural address that from here on out, the U.S. government will only recognize two genders, male and female. And so that has a lot of implications for the way rights are allocated here in the United States, how money is allocated, how some of the diversity initiatives that we've seen in the U.S. government, they're probably almost certainly likely going to be rolled back because of this statement. So a very, very important statement coming from Trump in that inaugural address.
Yeah. Talk to us about what we're seeing taking place now. We were looking at visuals off air, of course, and our viewers unable to see that. If Elon Musk also just getting off the stage there at that gala dinner. Perhaps you can talk to us about what that has looked like. Key, perhaps congratulatory messages that you've caught that stood out?
Yeah, absolutely. So President Trump is still at the U.S. Capitol, where obviously the ceremony was moved indoors due to the extreme cold temperatures here in Washington, D.C. So they're holding the inaugural luncheon right now, and then Trump will get in the motorcade and go up through downtown Washington, D.C. to a downtown arena that we have here, where they'll hold the traditional inaugural parade inside because of those cold temperatures. But before that, as you mentioned, we're hearing from some of the distinguished guests who have attended this inauguration, among them billionaire Elon Musk, the owner of X, formerly known as Twitter, and many other important companies. He was a key ally for President Trump during Trump's campaign last year, contributed billions of dollars to his campaign, and will now reportedly hold an important role as the director of government efficiency. This is another Trump campaign promise that really resonated with many of his voters, is to bring more efficiency into the U.S. government, and in some cases, promises to eliminate entire government agencies. So we are going to be seeing and hearing a lot more from Elon Musk in the coming days and months, not just here at the inaugural luncheon.
You know, it's interesting.
The time is 12 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock. You're still listening to Early Morning Scoop. And, of course, we are listening to the news around the world. And, of course, moving on, the African country have been heavily investing in the defense sectors to ensure they possess advanced weaponry and technological capabilities to maintain peace and security. According to the 2025 Global Firepower Index, Egypt, Nigeria, South Africa, and Ethiopia amongst the strongest military powers in Africa, and this is followed by Angola, Morocco, DRC Congo, Sudan, and Libya. Out of the 38 countries that it ranks, Global Firepower has said Benin, Central African Republic, Somalia, Libya, and Gabon, amongst others, are African lowest ranked militaries. And of course, now with this, the ranking have highlighted that the wide gaps and disparity among African countries' military spending. And so we might take a listen to the full conversation with regard to the ranking on the power, or rather the global power index.
Hard power. So who has the strongest military in the continent? And why do countries in the Sahel, like Benin, Burkina Faso, and Niger, rank among the lowest military powers in Africa, despite being ruled by military juntas? Our next report gets you more.
If you want peace, then prepare for war. This ancient Latin adage seems to have resonated with many countries across the world, particularly in Africa, where military preparedness can be seen as crucial to maintaining peace and stability. Africa is currently facing numerous internally driven crises, with insurgencies, terror attacks, and civil wars gripping several parts of the continent. And to address such disruptions, African nations are investing heavily in their defense sectors, ensuring they possess advanced weaponry and technological capabilities to maintain security. This is reflected in the recent data from Global Firepower, an American website, which has annually ranked countries based on their military power. The website evaluates a nation's military strength, particularly based on the number of military units, its financial standing, logistical capabilities, and geographic positioning. In Africa, Global Firepower evaluates 38 countries currently. Out of those, Egypt has topped as the strongest military on the continent. This is followed by Algeria, Nigeria, South Africa, Ethiopia, Angola, Morocco, the DR Congo, Sudan, and Libya. Now, Egypt has been investing heavily in its military due to increasing terrorism and maritime security threats in the region. It has a defense budget of over $6 billion and has a total of 440,000 active personnel and nearly 1,100 aircraft in its fleet. Its total naval assets, including submarines, helicopter carriers, and frigates, are nearly 150. Moving to Algeria, the North African country has the highest military spending in Africa of nearly $25 billion, mainly due to the growing security threats in its neighborhood. Algeria's total active personnel number 325,000, while Algiers has nearly 610 aircraft and 110 naval assets. Coming to West Africa, Nigeria has shown a significant improvement in the 2025 rankings in the Global Firepower Index. It rose from the fourth position to the third in 2025 among African nations, signaling its growing influence. Nigeria has also boosted its defense spending to over $3 billion. However, South Africa has dropped in the rankings in the continent. The country has fallen behind other nations in terms of its air and naval power in recent years. While it has a total defense budget of over $2 billion, South Africa has only 182 aircraft and 49 naval assets. But Global Firepower has not stopped at only ranking the strongest militaries in Africa. It has also ranked countries with the weakest militaries. Benin, the Central African Republic, Somalia, Sierra Leone, Liberia, Gabon, Senegal, and Burkina Faso are among the weakest military powers in Africa. Their weakness has generally stemmed from a combination of economic limitations, political challenges, and structural issues. Many of these African nations also have constrained economies, leading to limited budgets for defense spending, and this in turn has influenced their ranking. So, as Africa navigates another year of uncertainty, the rankings have highlighted the wide gaps and disparities that African nations are facing in maintaining and boosting their defense capabilities amid growing security challenges.
And on our last, the last update internationally is on the unemployment. Doctors and pharmacists in the Eastern Cape has once again taken the street in the Bishore to demand immediate employment. They've been holding a demonstration for the 3 weeks, but CRIM, they have not received any adequate assistance with their pride. The provision government had previously indicated that it was sourcing funds as the means of the intervention, and we may take a listen to this particular subject.
Demonstrations for 3 weeks, but claim they've not received any tangible. Has previously indicated that it was sourcing funds as a means of intervention. SABC News reporter Abunkila Yankees filed this story from Bishop.
Unemployed doctors, now including pharmacists, have continued to wage their frustrations to the provincial government, pleading for their intervention into their crisis, saying that they'll do anything in their power to ensure that their voices are heard and that they'll continue making these demonstrations until something comes to light. Let's bring in one of the affected pharmacists, Ulukanyo Ngalo. Sir, thanks a lot for your time. You are saying it's the first time you are coming here as pharmacists joining the doctors. Take us through your plight.
Okay, so we are joining the doctors today simply because the main thing that we want to do is to issue out the memo personally to the MSO or the other relevant people. Secondly, we emailed the memorandum on the 9th of January. In the country, we are around 2,000 pharmacists that are unemployed. We've also collected around 500 signatures of unemployed pharmacists currently. Some are striking in Gauteng, and we decided to join the doctors so that we can try to make our voices to be heard. Because clinics are very full, the hospital, the queues are long. The patients, they don't get their medication simply because there are no pharmacists in CHCs and those clinics.
Before coming here, what other means have you been doing to ensure you get the attention of the relevant stakeholders?
What we did is that we've tried to contact parties such as INEHAU to assist us in dealing with this matter. We have also tried to email as much as we could to the relevant people such as the MEC of the Eastern Cape.
And take us through how has it affected you personally?
This is affecting us personally because we go through school for 4 years and we are forced. In fact, it's compulsory for us to do 1 year of internship and then also have 1 year of compulsory community service that is done both in government sectors. So now it's very difficult for us even to go to the private that we are being directed to because we've been in government and in private they need the private experience. So we are pleading with the government to create posts so that we can serve our communities because we lack in the Eastern Cape in terms of pharmacists.
Earlier you mentioned on how dire the situation is in terms of your services in clinics and hospitals here in the province. Take us through that.
Okay, so what you're gonna find is that in most hospitals you're gonna find that there is like one or two pharmacists that are there, such as a district hospital or a regional hospital. So what's gonna happen is that there's a lot of assistants that are there, but there's that gap for pharmacists because pharmacists deal with procurement. They deal with those medication errors that are costing government millions now when they are being sued.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, we are yet.
And that marks our last update internationally. We can go into a very, very short commercial break. We'll be back for more. All that to start off with local news. Do not go away.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Welcome back. The time is 22 minutes in the off 6 o'clock and you're still listening to Early Morning Scoop. Thank you for tuning in. And before I give you the local news, please do not forget to follow us on our social media pages. Eagle FM Namibia, you'll find us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Please do follow us. Please do share our item, share our update, do like, do comment, do whatever you can do, man. And of course, do not also forget to follow our page, the newspaper page. Please do follow. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and of course TikTok, and as well as the WhatsApp channel. Do subscribe just to catch up also the daily news update, especially focusing on economic, and so that you can also inform yourself on what is happening around the country and of course around the world. And do not also forget to download our apps. We have Imba app, we have Eagle FM app. Do try to download on your Google Play Store and also, of course, on your app store. Yeah, and starting off locally, the AU donated 20 million for advancing integrity and, of course, governance in Namibia. The United Nations Development Program in Namibia collaborated with the Anti-Corruption Commission of Namibia, and this collaboration is aimed to good governance, transparency, and accountability in the country. The UN donated 20 million Namibian dollar meant to support Namibia to commit to continue with the efforts to achieve the national development goals in building a transparency and accountable society. And we might take a listen to to Anna Bratis Mountains, the AU ambassador to Namibia, as she narrates this particular donation.
Namibia. This partnership marks a significant step in a journey to promote good governance, transparency, and accountability here in Namibia. The EU's commitment to this initiative is closely aligned to Namibia's own national development agenda, notably the fifth national development plan and the Harambe Prosperity Plan 2. Both of these frameworks place an emphasis on the importance of transparency, accountability, governance, and the promotion of institution integrity as core pillars of Namibia's vision for sustainable development. With the 20 million Namibian dollar contributions from the EU to UNDP, we will support Namibia in this effort to achieve its national development goals and build a transparent, equitable society that is resilient to corruption and deeply rooted in the principles of rule of law. Corruption is not merely a local or regional problem. It is indeed of international concern, because of its profound economic, social, and environmental consequences. According to recent estimates by the World Economic Forum, corruption costs the global economy over $6.3 trillion yearly, which accounts for about 5% of global GDP. This financial drain cripples the resources that are so dearly needed for the development of our societies. Corruption exacerbates inequalities, especially when funds meant for healthcare, education, and infrastructure are misdirected or misappropriated. Corruption also distorts competition, hinders economic growth, and erodes public trust in institutions. Therefore, addressing corruption is a global imperative that is enshrined in the UN Sustainable Development Goals, so that resources can go to where they are most needed. Ladies and gentlemen, the EU has taken a strong, proactive stance on joining forces with partners to tackle corruption head on. Our funding supports anti-corruption initiatives in over 40 countries across the world. We have established partnerships with governments and society and international organizations to enhance transparency, strengthen justice systems, and ensure accountable governance. Our work with public institutions and the various UN bodies seeks to encourage a culture of accountability in the public sector and improve the legislative frameworks that uphold anti-corruption measures. Typical initiatives that we have been supporting are improved access to information law, digital transparency tools, and implementing public financial management reforms to prevent the misuse of state resources. Our engagement here in Namibia, in collaboration with the UNDP and the government of Namibia, is grounded in the conviction that anti-corruption measures, justice, and the rule of law are interconnected and mutually reinforcing. Corruption, by its very nature, undermines the rule of law. When laws are circumvented or justice is applied selectively, we risk losing the trust of ordinary citizens in the institutions and the democratic social order. And often it is the most marginalized members of society who suffer most.
She further explained that the cooperation or the contribution agreement rests on two pillars, which is strengthening the management and, of course, technical capacity of the Anti-Corruption Commission through expertise to fulfill its mandate, as well as contributing to the effective implementation of the National Anti-Corruption Strategy and Action Plan.
Respect, strengthening anti-corruption initiatives is not simply a financial exercise. It is about human and civil rights. It is about creating an environment where every citizen is empowered and free to pursue opportunities and prosperity. Today's a contribution agreement with UNDP is another milestone in our partnership with Namibia on promoting good governance actions. Our contribution agreement basically rests on two pillars. Firstly, strengthening the management and technical capacity of the ACC through expertise so that it comprehensively fulfills its mandate. This includes invigorating cooperation with other public institutions involved in fighting corruption. And secondly, to contribute to the effective implementation of the National Anti-Corruption Strategy and Action Plan in collaboration with several Dominican government institutions. UNDP were late in the program, or rather, sorry, UNDP has already explained the individual components of the projects. Let me just highlight that UNDP project includes a provision to help set up.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not
the office of an independent information commissioner to implement the Access to Information Act. This act was passed 2 years ago and is a commendable step by legislators to grant people the right to access information held by public and private entities. This is not the first cooperation of the Anti-Corruption Commission. The EU has already assisted the ACC in developing its national framework for corruption risk management, where it collaborated with EU and African peer experts. The EU has been called on by several governmental and CSO actors to support governance-related initiatives. Let me just highlight a few, which demonstrate our comprehensive approach to governance, which looks at working not only with public institutions, but also CSOs. These include expertise to Namibia's National Assembly in developing an online bill tracking system that will provide comprehensive, user-friendly access to legislative processes. Namibia has also called on the EU-funded expertise to tackle strategic deficiencies in its anti-money laundering system so as to be removed from the Financial Action Task Force grey list and establish long-term reforms. We are in talks with the Ministry of Justice on providing specialized technical assistance on Namibia's whistleblower and witness protection mechanism. Dear partners and friends, In closing, let me express my appreciation to the Namibian authorities for the trust they have shown by seeking a partnership with the EU. It is a demonstration of the strong value base we share of democracy, good governance, and civil society and civil rights. The fact that most of the cooperation with the Namibian authorities until now has been through peer-to-peer exchanges between Namibian and European experts also demonstrates that we all have our governance challenges to deal with and that we can benefit from learning from each other's experiences. As we look ahead, I'm confident that this new initiative will strengthen Namibia's institutions.
Furthermore, Alka Bhatia, representative of UNDP, which is now United Nations Development Programme, Namibia emphasized on how corruption can impact the country if not managed. We might take a listen to this one.
We are delighted at this excellent start of the year and to see so many of our partners and stakeholders at this signing ceremony of the Good Governance Project, which will run from 2025 to 2028. This EU-UNDP collaboration in partnership with the government of Namibia and your presence here today embodies a shared commitment to fostering transparency, accountability, and sustainable development. Today marks a pivotal milestone in addressing governance challenges and building a culture of integrity. Corruption is a complex and persistent social, political, and economic problem that affects all countries and regions in the world. It erodes democracy, rule of law, and citizen trust in public institutions. Corruption undermines human rights, state legitimacy, and public service delivery, and fundamentally undermines equitable growth. It distorts functioning markets and stymies sustainable development. Corruption perpetuates inequality and exclusion and impacts various segments of society differently. Women and children and marginalized sections of society in particular bear a disproportionate burden due to systemic inequalities that limit their access to resources and opportunities. Addressing corruption, therefore, requires a gender-sensitive approach that not only recognizes the disparities in society, but actively seeks to rectify them. As Pope Francis once said, corruption is paid by the poor. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, in 2018, Namibia recorded over 872 corruption cases with the ACC, many of which still remain unresolved. This has fueled public frustration, economic hardships, and perceptions of impunity for the powerful. Restoring hope and dignity demands a comprehensive effort to combat corruption and uphold the rule of law. This three-year initiative, co-designed with government, civil society, and private sector stakeholders, aligns with Namibia's Harambe Prosperity Plan, the second Prosperity Plan, the upcoming sixth National Development Plan, Vision 2030, and the United Nations Sustainable Cooperation Development Framework, which is rolled out this year from 2025 to 2029, as well as the UNDP's country program document. This action is a strategic effort to support the National Anti-Corruption Strategy and Action Plan, advance good governance, and accelerate SDG 16, which is about promoting peace, justice, and strong institutions.
Moving on politically, IPC case in the court, the Electoral Court, has put on hold proceedings in the Independence Project for Change, IPC, legal challenge of the National Assembly election until the Supreme Court delivers a verdict on a related case involving the 2024 presidential election. We might take a listen to this as my colleague David Chombe gave us this update.
Yes, we are continuing with, early morning scoop. We are continuing with analysis of electoral case. As you understand that yesterday, the electoral court has postponed the case of that was an application of Independent Patriotic for Change in order to nullify the election of 2024 National Assembly elections. Then yesterday, Judge Prisclo has postponed this case to the 20th of February, in line with the case that the same argument is already in the Supreme Court, then the case of the same matter is already in the Supreme Court. Yeah, that's why today I'm in a conversation with a political scientist, Dr. Ben Mlongeni. We are going to listen at his view and how he understands this case. Dr. Ben, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, colleague. Good morning, listeners.
Yes, we are well. Maybe just your view, especially regarding to the postponement of the case or the decision of the electoral court of yesterday, and maybe its impact to the Namibian democracy.